There are a lot of authors on the subject today. One of the best things you can do, and I've done this before, is go to your library and get the reader's guide and just look up time or management or priorities. And you would be amazed at the wealth of information that are in articles and some of the current periodicals in your library. But it's some tremendous help there if you want to get it. Let's look up these verses. Somebody look up Psalms while we're doing it. Psalms 90, verses 10 through 12. And read that aloud if you would, please. Psalms 90, verses 10 through 12.
The length of our days is 70 years or 80, if we have the strength. Yet their span is but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass, and we fly away. 11?
Yeah.
Who knows the power of your anger? For your wrath is as great as the fear that is due you. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom.
Okay. Life is short, so teach us to number our days, that we may present unto thee a heart of wisdom. That's not a bad objective, is to present to God a wise heart. But in one of the processes in doing that is to number your days. Where are you going? Each day is important. Each day counts. Each part of each day counts. Ephesians 5, 15 and 16. Looked that up. I memorized it in the Berkeley version, I think. Well, someone look that up and read it in your translation. Ephesians 5, 15 and 16. Okay, go ahead, please.
Be very careful, then, how you live. Not as unwise, but as wise. Making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil.
Okay. Ephesians 5, 15 and 16. Making the most of your opportunity, because the days are evil. Philippians 3, 13 and 14. Someone read that one. Philippians 3, 13 and 14.
Leaving those things which are behind.
Okay. Okay, forgetting those things which are behind, there's not a whole lot we can do about yesterday and the events in yesterday except to learn from them. But there's nothing we can do to change that. But forgetting those things which are behind and looking forward to those things which are before. And I think here we're speaking of a very clear understanding of where we're going. And today, what do? We press toward that mark. Now, the term pressure implies resistance. It is not easy to use your time wisely. It is not easy to set a goal and to press toward that goal, or to go toward that goal. Press toward the mark. Overcome resistance. But forgetting the past, I can't do anything about that except to learn the lessons of it. Clearly focus on where I'm going with my life, and press in that direction every day. That's the admonition of Philippians, or Paul, what Paul said he did with his life in Philippians 3, 13 and 14. Okay, I've got some comments on our handouts. But here's one by Eric Hoffer that I wrote down a number of years ago. I read this book, but he makes a statement, we are warned not to waste our time, but we are brought up to waste our life. Isn't that true? Every day is so important, what we do with each day. But nobody thinks through on the total of life, the totality of life. Where are you going? What are you going to do when you got one foot in the grave and it's about all over? What do you want to turn around and see? What did you do with your life? And so, you know, another comment that we'll have down here is Henry David Thoreau made the statement, as if you could kill time without injuring eternity. They're tied together. As if you can kill time without impacting eternity. They're tied together. And that we use today wisely, but does it tie into where we want to go? We got a lot done today. Did it matter? Was it important? Was it a part of what we want to do with our life and accomplish with our life? Or did we just get a lot of stuff done? Then another guy makes a comment, technology has mastered the art of saving time, but not the art of spending it. How are you spending your time? You investing it? Throwing it away? You know, when Billy Graham preached Dawson Trotman's funeral, he made an astounding observation. He said, this is one man who the verse, you know, who this one thing I do, not these 40 things I dabble in. And he made that description of Dawson Trotman. This one thing I do, not these 40 things I dabble in. Of course, Dawson Trotman had probably one of the greatest impacts. Billy Graham made the statement that he had touched more lives than any man he'd ever known. But he didn't do it by dabbling in 40 things. He did one thing. He was clearly focused. I think anybody was ever focused on training men, it was Dawson Trotman. He has a tape out called The Need of the Hour, and that need was to train men. Actually, it's to believe God. But he thought it was train men. But there's nobody that gave his life to training men more than Dawson. And you see the impact today. You see the impact of his life. Well, Jesus had an extremely busy... Let me see. Let me give you another one here. You can read this one. Someone read that. Can someone read that one? We go and keep on going until the object of the game seems to be to go and keep on going. We do and keep on doing until we do without knowing, without feeling. Is there no time to stop and reflect? Is there no time to stop? Is there no time? If we stopped, would we keep on going? If we reflected, would we keep doing what we do? For when what we have done and where we have gone is dissolved into oblivion or strung on the meaningless chain of half-remembered this and that, if there is no reflection, in all of our doing, have we done anything? In all of our going, have we been anywhere? Is it a wasted life? You know, the saying goes that one of the saddest things in life is for a man to give all of his effort to climb the mountain, finally reach the top, only to realize it was the wrong mountain. And I said, gave all of his effort, gave his life, spent his time, climbed the mountain, and made it to the top, only to realize it was the wrong mountain. So that's what we want to deal with today. Of course, the example, I guess, in just about everything good is Jesus. I don't know of almost anything that we can talk about good that he wasn't a phenomenal example. And this thing of focus and purpose in life, Jesus personified the terms. He had three goals, basically, as far as we can tell from the New Testament. That was to reveal the Father, to save mankind, and to train 12, train some men. He never varied from that. He healed people, he taught the multitudes, he dealt with individuals, he sparred with the Pharisees, he got into theological discussions with Nicodemus, but these three things are what he did. He revealed the Father, told us who the Father was like, he saved mankind, and he trained 12. Again, could you reduce your life? A guy walked up to you and you said, I know what you're all about. What would he write down? I know where you're going. What would he write down? Someone read, please, 1 Corinthians 9, 25 through 27. 1 Corinthians 9, 25 through 27. Very familiar passage of Scripture.
Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For consider your call, brethren, that there...
No.
And everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They didn't do it to receive perishable wreath, and we didn't perishable.
Okay.
Therefore I run in such a way, not without aim, I box in such a way as not being here.
Okay, and read the next verse.
But I buffet my body and make it my slave, lest possibly after I have preached to others, I myself should be disqualified.
Okay. Paul, the Apostle Paul uses a couple of analogies. I like a boxer, I don't beat aimlessly. I know what I'm doing. I don't just beat the air. I know where I'm going. And so, of course, he just got through talking about it in verse 24. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize or run that ye may obtain. By the way, as a sidelight, I really wrestled with that verse for years. You know, when you get in the Navigators, you memorize a lot of good verses. You go to conference and you hear all these good verses and you memorize them. And years later, you realize you don't know what they mean. You've quoted them and reviewed them for years, but you've not quite got a grip on this thing, and verses like that bother me. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? And I thought to myself, I thought we were all winners. What do you mean one receives the prize? I thought we were all winners. I mean, I don't understand what you're saying, Paul. And finally one day, I think it crystallized for me, and that is I was thinking, I think what Paul's saying is that if there's only one guy that's going to qualify for heaven by the way he lives, only one's going to make it. You ought to make sure that you're that one. Live your life that way. If only one makes it, you ought to be living in such a way that you're that one. I think that's what he meant. But if we're going to get victory in this area, gang, the ball is in your court. You can pray about this. You can pray at, God, get my priorities right. God, help me use my time wisely. But gang, that And I'm not diminishing the power of prayer. But a lot of times that thing comes right back on your shoulder. It's up to you. I heard a little thing one time that I really feel it's quite apropos. And I don't mean to write God out of this picture at all. Let me give you an example. I was helping a guy on his finances one time. He was a truck driver, had his own trucking company. And he made the comment, he was in bad shape financially, and I was trying to help him with the thing. And he made the statement, he said, well, if God wants me to go bankrupt, that'll happen. If God wants me to make it, that'll happen. And I told him, I said, Rodney, I hate to say this, but God ain't got nothing to do with that. Your mismanagement and stupidity is what's got you in this trouble, not God. God ain't had nothing to do with the stupid decisions that you've made. And so that's what I'm trying to say here. If your life is helter-skelter and messed up and whatever, I'm not sure you can put that blame on God. In fact, I think we had a verse up here a few minutes ago. See this one down at the bottom? Man may ruin his chances by his own foolishness and then blame it on the Lord. Well, God, you just wanted me to go bankrupt, right? But what I'm trying to say is there's 10 two-letter words that I heard once. Let me pass them on to you. 10 two-letter words. If it is to be, it is up to me. And one time I was praying about a thing, and I was wanting more time, and I was wanting to... So I told the Lord, I said, you know, God, I want to give you this business. I just want to give you this business, and you take care of this business, and I'll give myself to ministering to men. And I tell you what, the Lord almost spoke to me audibly. No way. You ain't dumping this mess on me. I mean, that was so strong that it was almost audible. I mean, just like that, God says, no way, you're not dumping this mess on me, fella. This is your deal. And I'm helping you, and I'm with you. But you're not going to dump that thing on me, and then if it goes down the tubes, blame me. Uh-uh. That's your, you're riding in that saddle. That's your horse. And that's what I'm trying to say. Gang, if you're going to get some priorities in your life and some direction to your life, it's up to you. You got to make the decision. You got to make the resolve. I got to make the resolve. Speaking of resolve, I tell you a couple of stories about that. I grew up with a dad that was a hard-working fella, never finished high school, didn't know much about treating people, or wasn't too much on the personality side or the person skills. He just didn't have many, but he was a hard-working, came off of a farm, had a very cruel... My granddad on my dad's side was just borderline cruel. He was just tough as nails, but unfeeling almost. And my dad came out of that situation, and so he started into a business. But the only time my dad ever hugged me, my only time I can remember my dad ever touching me, is all of my life, the only time I can remember my dad ever touching me is the day I came home from Vietnam. And I had been wounded and shot up over there, and that kind of scared him. He was scared to death anyway. And here his son was over in Vietnam, and I came home, and the day I came home, he hugged me. Only time in my life. Now, he died in 84, and he just didn't have he just didn't know how to relate to folks. Well, I grew up and got married. Well, guess where my strengths were? They weren't in relationships. So guess where that plays out mostly? In your marriage. And so I'm driving down the road one day, and my wife's crying. She says, we were talking about our relationship or the lack thereof. And she said, just how do you define love anyway? So I told her I did love her. I loved her deeply. She said, well, just how do you define that? Well, and being the good old navigator type, I quoted 1 Corinthians 13. Oh, why not? And I told you, love is very patient and kind, never jealous or envious, never boastful or proud. I started around, I said, that's what I try to go by. And she said, well, and the first two, I said, love is very patient and kind. She said, you're neither patient nor kind. Well, you know, she was right. She was right. But gang, I made a resolve. I'm going down, we're headed toward Fort Worth, going down I-30. And I make a resolve. I says, God, I will never be impatient or unkind to my wife ever. And I never have. Somehow, that's so crystallized in my thinking. And it just became such a horrible thing to me that I just made a resolve. I will never be that way with my wife again. And it was at a point where I made a resolve, and it took. Well, I can remember one other time, my son was, he's not like me. He plays the piano, and he draws pictures, and he's arty, and he's, I'm kind of the choleric type, and he's very personable, and everybody loves him, and he's a super guy. I mean, I just admire the guy to no end. I love him to death, super guy, but when he was growing up, I would, every now and then, he would do something that would just fry me, and I'd get mad at him. And one time I was speaking to him straight face to face, and I was really angry. And all of a sudden, he just couldn't take that. And it just was almost like it was destroying him. And I think, and I saw it. I saw it in his face, my anger, what it was doing to him. And so I made that resolve. I said, God, I'm sorry. I will never, ever get mad at my son ever again. I don't care what it is. I will never express anger to my son again. And I never have. I never have. And he took us through some rough, rough waters. But I saw that, and I saw how it was hurting him, and it just was such a clear picture to me that I thought, God, I will never be that again. And gangs, in our life, we have to come to those places at times in our life where we have to say, God, I will never do this again, or God, I will commit myself, I will be this way. And we have to come to that resolve. But gang, very seldom does change happen until we make that resolve. Now, in the Screwtape Letters, phenomenal book. I read that thing every now and then, just like the first time I've ever read it. So many lessons in that thing from the Screwtape Letters. But one of the things that he does, and this is on about page 18 or 19, but he says, Screwtape's all bothered about these church people because they're getting all excited and all emotional. They're just, they're shouting, and they're just clapping their hands, and they're excited about the Lord, and they're singing, and he writes, and he says, man, we got problems. He says, don't worry about that. The guy writes him back and says, don't worry about that. He said, in fact, you ought to encourage that. Man, get them Christians excited and get them singing and jumping up and clapping their hands and all encouraged. He said, you got to encourage them to do that way. But he said, listen, if they ever get to thinking seriously about that stuff and who Jesus is and all that, if they really start thinking seriously about it, you better watch that. And he said, now let me tell you, don't ever let it get down to their will. Because if it ever gets down to the arena of the will, you're in trouble. And gang, that's exactly right. As long as we're just excited about the Lord and we're just clapping our hands and we're in the crowd singing and we're going to these conferences and we go to Promise Keepers and we stand up and throw the beach balls and shout and everything else. Oh, Screwtape, he said, man, this is great, let them go. But when they get down on their knees and they say, God, before God, this I will do this, then Satan's in trouble. He's in serious trouble. But gang, that's what we have to do. If we're going to make resolve, that's what we got to do. I went to a use of time seminar. I think the reason that the navigators give me these things is because they look around and say, now who is the guy that really needs to bone up on this area? I mean, this guy is terrible in this area. Who can we give this topic to? And so I think that's why they picked me out for this one. Yeah, this week. But I was I went to a seminar before. Went to Tyler, Texas one time several years ago. And I don't remember a thing that cost me $75. But the guy made one statement that I would have paid the $75 for. And he made this one. It's the only thing I remember from the seminar, but he said this right here. He made this statement. You may not always get what you want, but you almost always get what you choose. And friend, that hit me like a ton of bricks. You may not always get what you want, but you almost always get what you choose. And gang, the life that you're choosing, when you get to your grave and you turn around, where you are today is exactly where you chose to be. Nobody put you there. It was you. And you chose it step by step, day by day. Isn't that right? You may not always get what you want, but you almost always get what you choose. Warren had some good words the first night here. Be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. That was a good message to start off this conference. Good message. So then the question. You were raised, I was raised with a certain set of parents. It didn't shock God that I had this dad, and this dad married this mom. And I had that brother and I had that sister, and you know, we lived in this part of the country, and I went to that school. None of that shocked God. So having the genes and the chromosomes and so forth that I got, and being raised in a certain atmosphere with certain values and so forth and so on, and then meeting Max Barnett and Bill Gibbs and these guys at A&M and so forth, okay, what is God, what does He want with me? None of that is accident. So what does God want with you? What does God want with your life? What does He want to do with your life? What does He want you to be? What does He want you to do? And gang, if we don't answer that in clear terminology, I think we're just wandering. Don't you? If we don't know what God, what will, you know, the apostle of God, what would Thou have me to do? God, what do You want me to do? And there's three things that I'd like for you to consider, and that is your gifts. How has God gifted you? What are you good at? What are your abilities? And what is your calling? You know, gang, there's certain things that just flip my switch. And the guy gets up and he starts talking about mission fields, and it just flips my switch. And these guys started talking about Africa the other day, and they're talking about these different places that they've gone and the different work and how it's spread throughout Africa. Man, I tell you what, it just flipped my switch. My lights all come on. Now, some people, they hear that and they don't get all. I got a buddy up in San Luis Obispo, California, that wouldn't stir him at all. But you start talking about theology. I got a buddy in Fort Worth. He's the only guy I know that stays up at 3 o'clock in the morning reading theology. I mean, it would drive me to drink. I mean, the stuff that he reads, and he just pours over it. He loves it. He just digs and digs and digs. And, of course, when you speak with him, it's just this wisdom and this understanding of what God has done through the years just comes out. Wow! But that's not me. It's just not what what flips my switch. But what does? What are your gifts? What are your abilities? And what is your calling? Now that I talked the other night, we're all called to have fellowship with Christ. But what is God? How has God wired you? Gave you a certain kind of a personality, a certain your parents and your upbringing, the part of the country you lived in, and so forth and so on. What has God wired you to do? What I'm encouraging you to do is to give some very, very serious thought about that. And chances are, if you're not real clear in that, you could be wandering. Okay. Now. Let me see if I didn't have another one before that. 5, 6. Let me put this one up there. Okay, this is from a guy named McKenzie, but he says, are you saying that anybody who wants to organize his time properly can do so and avoid overwork? He says, definitely. Yes. Yes. Then he says this. Successful businessmen always have before them the objectives they want to accomplish on both a long range and short range, and anything that prevents them from achieving those objectives can be listed as a time waster. Is it clear in your mind? Is it that clear? This is a comment that Lakin made that I thought was helpful. Most people, and these are in your handouts board, by the way, of course, but most people don't think in terms of minutes, says Lakin. They waste all the minutes. Nor do they think in terms of their whole life. They operate in the mid-range of hours or days, so they start over again every week and spend another chunk unrelated to their lifetime goals. They're doing a random walk through life, moving without really getting anywhere. The real question is, what do we really want to do? And if we do not know, sooner or later we will realize that whatever it was, there's not enough time left to do it. Now, gang, that to me, all the bells go off. All the whistles blow. Because if you can't figure it out, one of these days, whenever you do, there's not enough time left to do it. And I'm 55, and I'm getting very close to no more startovers. You know, you've heard these guys that want to start over. I'm running out of opportunities to start over. I better have this thing figured out. And you had too. You know, the sad thing, the guy gets to heaven and God says, you know, what'd you do with your life? And a guy said, well, I had this business. And God said, well, what about ministry? I mean, how about people? You invest in anybody's life? And he said, you know, God, I was getting to that. I mean, just as soon as I got that business squared away and my kids, you know, kind of off and gone, and I was getting to that. Isn't that sad? Well, here's a test. I got this out of one of Lakin's books, and I understand what he's getting to, and I agree with what he's getting to, but I take a lot more time than what he. But let me put up to you some of the things here that he says that we need to do, and that is to write out your lifetime. He says you can do this in 16 minutes, but I like to spend a little more time. I went through this, I've done this several times, and just say, okay, in 2 minutes, I'm going to write down what I want my life to account for. But then I like to go by and really think through it, and I've done that. But list your lifetime goals, and then what would you like to accomplish in the next five, and what would you do if you only had 6 months? What would you do in the next 6 months? And what that forces you to do is to think through, what do I really want to do with my life? What do I really want it to account for? Let's take about 3 or 4 minutes. And you write down some things just in as clear of term you can. What are your lifetime goals? What do you want God, what do you think God wants you to do with your life? What are your lifetime goals? Think through on that just a few minutes and write down 3 or 4 of them. We'll take just 2 or 3 minutes to do that. Okay, let's have some volunteers. A couple of things that some of the things that you may have written down. Anyone?
Raise your children to serve God.
Okay, any comments on that one? What do you think about that one? Raise your children to serve God. Okay, how about another?
To know God and develop my relationship with Him.
Okay, to know God and to develop my relationship with Him. Any comments on that one? Anybody have something similar to that? Yes, go ahead.
Walk humbly with God.
To walk humbly with God? Okay, yes.
Learn to love Him with all my heart.
Learn to love God with all my heart? Okay, yes, sir. Okay, to use what God has given me. Not hide the talent in the sand? Yes. Okay, to serve God with the gifts that He's given me?
Reproduce myself spiritually.
Okay, reproduce myself spiritually? Anything wrong with any of these? Now, gang, the trick is that after you put that down, and that's so lofty sounding and so scriptural, and you just think, man, that's right on target, then what? Okay, then the next question is, well, and what Lakin does is he drops it then down to 3 years. What of that goal, if I want to use my gifts and abilities to serve God, or if I want to reproduce spiritually, or if I want to develop my relationship to God, what can I be doing in the next 3 years? What does that look like? And you know where he's headed. But in the next 3 years, what's that look like? Do you need to go to seminary? Do you need to get into a Bible study? Do you need to what? What is that? What is your shorter range goal than that lifetime goal? Know what I mean?
It would seem that there could be two. I mean, one would be a goal that you would achieve in 3 years,
mm-hmm.
And I guess thought. As I think about it, it gets down to one. I mean, an example would be the wheel. In 3 years, I want to have that wheel revolving smoothly in my life.
Good luck. Oh, man, so sure. Okay. Pardon? So what's your comment? You want to have the wheel revolving or operating smoothly in your life? So are you saying that would be a lifetime or a three-year or just a continuous or...
As I think of shorter periods,
mm-hmm.
I think of things like that as
okay.
ways to identify the specific.
Okay, see, if your goal is to walk humbly with God or to know God, then your goal would be to get the spokes of the wheel functioning in my life on a regular basis.
Yeah.
That's your goal. And the next question would be, and of course this is Lakin's system and it's a good one. If you only had 6 months, How would you do that? What are you going to implement of that part in the next 6 months? And see, this gets it, gang, out of the theory and the lofty-sounding platitudes down into reality. All right? And I think we're real good at saying, you know, that coming up with the right objective, the right lifetime objective, but then we kind of get into, we slow down and kind of get muddled as we try to define it out and bring it down to the specifics of, okay, now what do I need to be doing today or the next couple of months if I'm going to be there in 3 years and reach that lifetime goal? But if we don't do our homework, if we don't do that, then we're back up to the Lakin's deal or the other guy, Hoffer, who said, you know, we're taught to spend our time wisely but to waste our life. Comments? Now, this is an anachronism that I learned that's helped me a bunch. But I'm going to put this up here. It's not in your handout. But one of the things that I always do, almost always do, but when I come up with an objective, then the next thing I want to come up with is the activity or activities that will accomplish that objective. OA. This T stands for the objective, the activities that will accomplish the objective, the time, when am I going to do that? So you come up with this thing, you say, I want the wheel operative in my life. So what are the activities? Well, this talks about the words, so I may want to start memorizing scripture. I may want to get the hand going. I may want to get into a Bible study or a good fellowship. I may want to get with a couple of buddies and start praying. Those are the activities. Well, when are you going to do that? And the S is just kind of, well, they stick a word on there and make it fit, but it's a serious evaluation. And I used to do, what I like to do is on Sunday afternoons, I'll take a walk. Not every Sunday afternoon, but almost always, I'll take a walk and just think through the week, think through the coming week and what I'm going to do and where am I going and try to evaluate where I've been and am I on target. But Sunday afternoons, for me, it's just a good time. Dallas is usually losing or something, so I don't want to watch football, so I just got to take a walk, you know. But it's a good time for me. Objective. Okay. What is your objective? What's the activity that will accomplish the objective? Time, when are you going to do it? And seriously evaluate whether or not you're achieving it or you're reaching it. Yes?
Do you or Lakin have any clarification rules to help me? I've done this.
Mm-hmm.
And if I miss my goals,
yeah.
I miss my goals. And then I break those down into projects. And then I break those down in the next 3 years. And then I do that. I got amazed that I'm so confused by then, you know, of working that in.
Well, I would break that down. I would just cull it, and I would take, say, I do mine in categories. For instance, I'll take spiritual life. What's my objective spiritually? What's my objective with the family? What's my objective with personal growth? What's my objective health-wise? And what's my objective in my business? And I'll just come up with one, and just work, and I won't and just narrow it down to where I'm focused on one thing. And I, you know, what I was talking to a guy one day, and I said, you know, if I didn't have to go to work, I could live this Christian life. Yeah. If I didn't have to go to work, I could live this life. I mean, I could get my quiet time in, get my verses reviewed, witness what I'm supposed to, get my Bible study done, and pray with people, meet with men. I could get it in if I didn't go to work. But unfortunately, you know, I roll out every morning at 5:30, and usually get in about 7 or 8, unfortunately. But, you know, I go to God and say, boy, God, I do this, but I have to work a lot. And I just don't think that flies. Any other comments about this gentleman's question?
What are your categories?
Those five. Generally, I use those five. I walk with God. I set goals in 5 years. My walk with God. My family, which is basically the relationship with my wife and three children. I have an in-law now and a granddaughter, but it, you know, those, I cover that. But the third thing that I talk about is my personal health, and I feel like that's important because if I've worn the horse out, I can't run a race. And the fourth thing is my personal growth. Like, I've got things done. I want to learn a second language. I want to learn so many new words per year, increasing my vocabulary. I read so many books a year, things like that. And then...
Other activities, other
things. Yeah, I develop my woodworking skills, and that's one of them. And then my fifth thing is my business. And I set objectives in those five areas. Now, when I say objectives, I'm talking about long-range objectives, and then I back it up to this year. I have in my study at home, I have a notebook. It's about the size of this one. And I've got all that in there, and I keep it on my desk. And I have those things written out, and I keep them right in front of me. And gang, we need to refer to those at least once a week. Just check through it. Now, sometimes I'll just pull my notebook down, and I'll flip through it, and I'll read them. And sometimes I'll read them, and I think, oh, you klutz, you missed that one. You know, you read through them, but it just kind of refocuses me, reorients me toward that which in my quiet time, in my times alone, and in my sober moments, I felt like this was the best goal of my life. This is where I should give my life to, in those sober moments. And in the hassle of the day, I go back and refocus on that. But I keep that on my desk. It's right there in front of my desk, right in my books. I got some books right in front of it. I keep it right there, and I look at it at least once a week. So this is not just an academic exercise that you do in file. Mercy, don't do that. Now, do we prioritize our schedule? I like it the other way around. I like to schedule our priorities. Pursue your priorities. It's all too easy to let the urgent crowd out the important, and the important the imperative, until the important and the imperative are postponed or admitted altogether. The only way out is to plan. Now, gang, I could tell myself this, and this is what I preach to myself, and that is, if you don't want to take the time to do this, and you don't want to think through on this, and give some effort and energy to this, then just go on living your helter-skelter life and shut up. And that's what I say to myself. Just go on living your helter-skelter, random walk through life and shut up. And that's what I tell myself. If you don't want to spend the time to think these issues through and get before God on your knees or whatever and thinking these things through, then go on and live your life. But when you step into the grave and you look back and you don't see a whole lot, say, so what? Okay? Any guy comments or questions? Or I didn't... You know, there's a lot of you guys in here. You know, and I look back here and here's Jack Mayhall. I mean, Jack could teach this thing left-handed. I mean, in fact, he kind of intimidates me sitting back there with... Because I know he's wrestled with these things for years. And he's the guy who's done it. He's thought through these issues. He could teach this thing out of his hip pocket here. I'm up here struggling. But I see a lot of you guys in here. Your lives are counting for something, but it didn't count that way. It wasn't, that is not by accident. You know, Roy Robinson. Gosh, you know, I mean, the very presence of the man sitting there, I feel like I need to go and sit down and say, Roy, forgive me. Would you please get up and straighten these people out? I'm messing it up. But these guys have done something with their life. Their life has counted, but it didn't happen by accident. They made decisions. And that's where I'm trying to get us to the point. We need to make some decisions. Yes? Well, let me tell you what I think about that. I don't know. Jesus is so far above me. I don't know if I can speak. But I think when Jesus went out in the temptation in the wilderness, I don't think he walked around for 39 days, you know, 23 hours and 50 minutes, kicking rocks and, you know, skipping rocks through the brook, and all of a sudden here's Satan and they ask him three questions. That's over with. I think that temptation process went on for weeks. And I think Jesus wrestled with the mission that God had given him. And I think he walked around thinking, God, how do I pull this thing off? What is the way? How do we do this? And he'd get these thoughts. Well, why don't you just do some miracles? Why don't you just, thrill them. I mean, turn, you know, stones into bread. I mean, by the way, all the things that Satan tempted him with, he did. You remember when he took the bread and a loaf of bread and made it into fed 5,000 folks? And I mean, the things that Satan tempted him with, he did. But that was not his way of reaching. And he wrestled with those things in that wilderness experience for 40 days. He wrestled with that. God, how, what are you doing? How do I pull this off? The mission to which you've called me, how do we do this? How do I honor you in this deal? How do I pull this off? I don't want to make a mistake. And I think Jesus wrestled with that. He didn't just walk around and kick rocks, you know, for 39 days and 23 hours, and all of a sudden Satan shows up and pops the big three to him. He quotes Deuteronomy, that's over with now. I'm glad that's, I can get on with the deal. I think he wrestled with Satan for days and days and days, trying to figure that thing out. And when Jesus came out of the wilderness, I think his face was set as to, like a flint as to what God wanted him to do and how he was going to pull it off. But I think I think in that sense, he wrestled and struggled with how he was going to accomplish the mission God had laid on him. And I got no theological basis for saying that or believing it, but it just seemed like to me that the temptation was more than just a few minutes. It was a long period where he wrestled with the mission that God had given him. Any other comments or questions, please? Now, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Schedule your... we talked about plan. The only way out is to plan. Again, what I do is that, first of all, I create this. That gives me direction. And that's changeable. That can change. But I give direction in five areas. Then I go to work the next morning. Okay? And I've got some contracts to sign with, you know, Gifford Hill Company about some rock, and I got to talk to Kerr McGee, because I keep, the way I handle all of the things that come into just my life every day is I need to call Craig, and we're going to have lunch together, and I need to get with this guy, and I need to do this, and I need to read this book and study this, and what, is that I keep a master do list. Keep everything on the same list. And it's usually a page and a half, 2 pages long. But it's a master do list. I just write everything down. And gang, when something happens, I'll write it down if it's on a piece of napkin. And I'll write that napkin down and stuff it in my shirt pocket. And when I get back, I'll pull that napkin out. Or sometime during the day, I'm going to transfer that napkin to my master do list. Now, I take the master do list. That's everything I need to get done. Home, family, God, everything else that I need to get done. Now, I don't write down to brush my teeth. I'm going to do that every morning, you know. But the thing, the events, the things that I need to do. And then I write down who's going to do that. When I put that on my list, I'm thinking, who am I going to give that to? And a lot of times it's me. But I'll write down on the side out there, who's, and then I'll write down on the other side of the page how much time I'm going to spend on that. 10 minutes, if it's a phone call, 25 minutes, an hour and a half, 3 hours, a day, a weekend. But I write down how much time I think that's going to take me to get that done. And then I will take my master do list, and before I go home every night, and it's night when I go home, every night when I go home, and I'll write down my list for the next day, and I put that in my day timer. And I always schedule one and two. I never schedule more than two things to do, because when I hit the ground the next morning, I want to know the first thing I'm supposed to get done, and I don't want to think about it. And I open that day timer, and I got number one there, and I got number two there. So I do that because then I'm underway. By that time, some other things may have happened, and 3, 4, 5, and 6 may get changed. But when I show up the next morning at work, I know what I'm going to do first. I know what is imperative for me to get done right then. And it just helps me to kind of come out of the blocks at a dead run. But that's how I operate on just the daily things. I keep a master do list. I transfer that to my day timer for the next day, and I schedule 1 and 2. I mean, I determine what I'm going to do first and second, and then the rest of it's up for grabs. And I keep that daytime with me all day long, all time. Now, one of the things that we want to talk about is develop a system. See where I've got that listed here. Let me put one other thing down. We talked about prioritizing your schedule or scheduling your priorities. One thing, and I hate to say this, but I just learned this recently, and that is, if I'm going to get it in, I need to schedule it in. Right now. When are you and your wife going to get some time? And gang, you need to write that in right now. Now, I keep a calendar on my wall. It's one of these calendars, you know, you know these construction companies, you get them from people all the time, maybe a supplier or something like that, but they got these big squares for every day, and they're kind of a good planning calendar. And I keep 1996 behind 1997, but I got 97 and 96 together if I need to refer back. But I write everything on those blocks and those calendars of events I got to do. And when I come into office every day, I'm looking right at that calendar the first thing. And I, what events, what things have I got to meet? I got a bid letting at 9. I've got to meet an engineer at 11 or 12. I got lunch with this guy or whatever. And I've got that written on that calendar. But that's where I put things. And gang, my wife's birthday is on that calendar, my kid's birthday, the trip that we're going to go, everything is on that calendar. And gang, if I'm, I don't want to use the term coward, but if I'm afraid to write it down, either I'm a very poor planner or I'm a coward. If I won't put down that my wife and I are going to Hot Springs this weekend, give a hang. We're going to go to Hot Springs this weekend. Or whatever. But you write down, I used to say, prioritize your schedule. No, schedule in your priorities. Now, what are your priorities? Schedule them in. Write them in. The things that are important to you, write them in. Okay? And then I talked about my system, but that's what you need to do. You need to create a system that you're comfortable with. How do you keep up with the things you need to do? And how do you schedule them in and get them done? Create your own system. For me, this works good. I knew a guy before that kept an 8.5 and 11 by notebook in his, it was a notebook, and he kept it on the seat of his car. And he recorded everything on it. And that's where I picked up this idea about using an 8.5 and writing down on your do list. And that's where I write everything down that I need to do on this 8.5 by 11. I transfer that to my day timer and mark number one and number two. Now, what happens at the end of the day when I don't have them all done? And that only happens every day. I didn't get them all done. Not necessarily, but I will look at them and say, well, do I need to do that really? But then they go back to the master do list, and then they may get put on the next day. And then a little more of an urgency to them. But at least the things I got done that day were, in my mind, the night before, the most critical. And that's my system. It works pretty well. I don't know if I get a lot done today. Who's to judge? But I think I get a lot done. Yes.
Do you have an accountability partner to help you with that?
Not on the daily. Mm-mm. I have an accountability partner, but not on the day. We don't meet every day or anything like that. He doesn't check my schedule. He does check my objectives. We discuss our objectives, where you're heading in life, and so forth. See, one of my objectives, spiritual, is to do an in-depth Bible study of Romans, Hebrews, and Galatians. And he and I are in Bible study on that. But one of my objectives spiritually is to memorize the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. But those are some objectives. What are some of your objectives? What do you think God's calling you guys to do? What's your objective? Bob, what's some of yours? You've thought through on this stuff before. You can teach us better than I could. What's your objective?
One is that I just need to build stronger relationships with my family. I've got three teenagers now, as of today,
mm-hmm.
15 to 13. And I just need to spend time. I was talking to Rod today. I just need to romance my girls more. Mm-hmm. Two girls and a wife. And I just need to just build more of a tender relationship with them. And I just need to. So I'm going to pick up some flowers for you home tonight.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you see the activity? The objective is to romance his gals, his teenage daughters, and pick up some flowers, and...
Tonight?
Yeah, but tonight is the time, and then he'll probably go home and see. Now, what I did with my girls when they were growing up, I had these gorgeous gals, we used to go out on dates. And, you know, they looked forward to that like crazy. And they'd get all dressed up, and we'd go down to Denny's or someplace, and they had no navigators, don't have any money, you know. But they'd go down to Denny's and buy pancakes. And that's what we would do, and they just loved that. They just loved that. They talk about it today. When Dad and I used to go out on dates. No objective. You know, what was the objective? Develop a good relationship with my kids. Activity. Take them out on a date. Time. I had, you know, I think Jennifer was on Tuesday night and Amy was on Thursday night. But that's how it works. Jack, you want to share some of the things? You've gone through this and taught this more than times, and you've got objectives. You've thought through this many times. What's some of your counsel and wisdom?
Well, for me personally, I would say that one of my top priorities in lifetime is to maintain a warm, intimate, wholesome, happy relationship with my wife, with my daughter, with my son-in-law, and with my two grandkids. And that's something I work at all the time.
You know, not to get personal, but as you've done that, what are some of the activities that you do that have enhanced that?
Carol and I have a date every week.
Mm-hmm.
My wife.
Mm-hmm. Do you men do that? You take your wife out every week?
Yeah.
Isn't that neat? If you don't do that, let me encourage you to do that. I mean, I think Jack would testify that that's a home run.
Another thing I do with Carol that we've done for years, but that I've always initiated, because I feel it's my responsibility as a husband to do it, and that is we spend at least a half hour a day just in in-depth communication with each other. At least a half hour, sometimes more. I've earned into husbands who haven't spent a half hour in-depth communication with their wife in a month.
Mm-hmm.
You can't build a relationship like that. I make it a point to get with my son-in-law. He was just like a son to me.
Yeah.
And spend time with him every, at least once a month. And talk about what's going on in his life, how he's doing, what's happening. I take my daughter out on a date.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you mentioned. Just to do the same thing. Carol and I go to every activity we could possibly make that our grandkids are involved in. Soccer, music, singing, corrals. Now my grandson's in college, and I can't do that because he's way halfway across the country.
Well, you men pick up on the tenor of that? If I were to ask you now, what's one of Jack's lifetime goals? Or would it have anything to do with family relationships or building into his family? Can you pick up on that? But that's, if you pick up on that, what you pick up on is the fact that he purposed with specific activities at specific times to do that. It wasn't just honey, I've been thinking, why don't we sit down and talk? I mean, no. He thought through on that. He planned that. You know what? You know, I've been thinking, I probably ought to go see my son-in-law. Hadn't seen him in, I can't remember when I saw him. No. What about some of you other men here that... Yes, sir.
We have five kids. The Lord's been gracious with they all know the Lord. And the oldest four are walking with the Lord and we're praying for the fifth to find a church home. But our kids now are 23 to 32. And we always had a goal to have our kids welcome their friends to our home.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they're all grown now, we still have a lot of the kids around and their friends and come over, and it's like one of the focal points. And we just really feel that was a good thing to, and that the Lord is blessed that we bring their friends over and just enjoy our family together and have a good time themselves.
Okay, now, see, that's an activity. What were you trying to accomplish with that?
Trying to accomplish letting our kids know that we love them, mm-hmm. and we wanted their friends to have the influence of our family.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, sir.
There are things we can do spontaneously. When we raised our kids, because they're all gone with friends and got bankers now, include them in what activities you can, whether small or... I would always grab a boy, even if I'm running to the store. And it doesn't take that much time, and they do love it.
Mm-hmm.
And if your head's up, you can probably get time with all of them every day, just accidentally,
mm-hmm.
if you're thinking. And that helped our relationship.
Well, see that, when he says if your head's up, what he's saying is, if that's in your heart, that's something you really want to see accomplished, then you'll see those opportunities and take them just like that. Yeah, Ted?
My wife and I want to take one week, one period of time every year, and just make sure that we're on the same compass heading, that we're doing what we feel like the Lord is calling us to do, and make any adjustments needed. So we'll typically take off into the mountains completely away from anything, that reminds us of our jobs, of what we perceive as our obligations, and spend some time just being still, knowing that He is God, and reviewing together what the priorities are.
Yeah, see, the objective is to refocus our life. And the activity is to get a week along in a somewhat remote area, but you got to schedule it, right? And that's what we're talking about. We got an objective, we got an activity that's going to help us accomplish that objective, and we schedule it and write it on the calendar. Okay? Yes, sir.
How do you and your wife negotiate these things? I mean, she has objectives, goals.
Mm-hmm.
How do you work together on that?
Well, I tell you, it's one of those, I don't know if I can explain it, but the older we get, the more harmonious we are. And I know we just, we communicate so quickly. And but I think she feels a tremendous freedom to, like right now, she's in Little Rock visiting her aunt. And I was going to go, and she didn't come to me and said, Chuck, do you think it'd be okay if I go? She just says, I'm going to be going to Little Rock visiting Aunt Eva May this weekend. She's getting out of the hospital, and I haven't seen her. And so we have there is within our commitment to each other tremendous freedom. And, but we the communication is there because we talk every day and we communicate every day and the level is there. And I don't know if we schedule, but we talk every day. Jack, you want to speak to that? Ask your question again.
How do you negotiate husband and wife to coordinate your goals?
Well, I don't know so much about goals, coordinating goals, as coordinating schedules, which blow out of goals. Like Chuck, Carol and I talk every day, and a lot of it has to do with what we're going to be doing that day, next week, or tomorrow. And we keep each other up to date on what has happened, what is going to happen. I know exactly what Carol's going to be doing while I'm away on this trip.
Mm-hmm.
Last night she spoke at a deal in Colorado Springs. Today she's taking a gal out to a conference. Yesterday afternoon she had a meeting with NAV Press, a new book. And I don't really know that. I can pray about it. She knows what I'm doing. Communication, that's the key. You just got to talk to each other as much as you possibly can. Share a date book, you know.
No.
I'm a date book guy too. I got a date timer. Carol's got a date timer.
Yeah, I couldn't. I'd be lost.
We have our date timers and we compare those. We'll, you know, as we go through those things, we'll say, hey, I don't have that in my schedule, in my date book, that you're going to be doing this. So I write it in. So I know everything that she's going to be doing for the next 6 months, and I know, and she knows everything we're going to be doing for the next 6 months. We know what we're going to be doing together for the next 6 months.
You, two things, let me reiterate. One is that get yourself a system, keeping up with all this stuff. Me, I've shared what I use. My wife is not nearly that structured. She doesn't have to be, but she's not nearly that structured. But we communicate. We talk a lot. Now, we don't walk and say, okay, now it's time to communicate. We there's just a heart-to-heart, and we can spend 5 minutes or 3 minutes and really lock on the wavelengths. But we talk a lot. And I think there's a tremendous freedom for her to express what she's thinking. And I'm sure that, you know, that's Carol. I mean, she says what she thinks, and she communicates her values and what she's thinking and so forth, and she's not threatened. There's freedom in that. Yes?
Can you do your little book up there?
My day timer?
Yeah, when you set your lifetime goals, list your lifetime goals in 5 years. At what point are you working with your wife? I ask that off of the question of that God commands us to be one flesh.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I set my goals, then this is something I feel like God has called my life, called me to do. And none of the things that I want to do would contradict what she wants to do. because she's on the right same wavelength with God as I am. But I don't expect her to meet my goals or to fit in with my goals or do what God's called me to do. God didn't call her to do my goals. God called her to do her goals. And so I don't really consider, when I'm writing down whether or not I'm going to memorize the book of Romans, whether or not she wants to memorize it, or if she cares or whatever. But the if I write down that I want to visit my son over in McKinney, Texas once a month, I don't say, now, sweetheart, now I'm committed once a month, you got to go with me. I put that down. But if ever I'm going, she's ready. Because she loves the son and she wants to see him too. It's usually me that can't work it in. But I don't really sit down and try to think through on how she's going to fit. These are the things that God's calling me to respond to. Anybody else want to speak to that? Yes.
You know, we've found that we've been married almost 4 years, and you develop a sort of an acknowledgement of each other's style.
Mm-hmm.
I know in Southern California, I was at a business for ministry. She had the same. And you'd watch us operate, you'd think we were two different individuals. But there was never any conflict in that because I knew her style.
Mm-hmm.
And the chemistry that we had together. And we didn't try to force things that weren't there. I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Yeah, see, I think if I were...
You try too hard. You know what I mean? To
you try to force it. See, I look at Gene and Irma Warr, and I think they both got to be insane. They do more in a week than I do all year. But that's the but they are one with that. You know, so I don't try to be Gene, and you know, Robbie doesn't try to be Irma. But God hasn't called me to be Gene. God's called me to be Chuck, and He's gifted me and given me certain abilities, and He's called me, and that's what I try to figure out. Now, God, how about me? What would you have me to do? And that's what I do. Now, yes.
One place God harmonizes what she, her goals are, and what our goals are.
See, I think that's really true. The longer that we are married, my wife and I now have been married about 32 years, and it just seems that we're more harmonious every year. I don't know how to explain that, but I know one thing that right now today, and for years and years, it's been this way. My wife is my best friend. And I wouldn't want to do anything that I'd want to do more than with my wife. I don't care if it's go fishing or duck hunting or go to a movie or out to dinner or down to the ballpark. I don't know if anybody would rather be with my wife. She didn't like to duck hunt, I mean. I did take my daughters duck hunting, though. I mean, yes, Jack?
I think George is pretty clear on something. When he talked about different styles,
yeah.
It has a lot to do with the difference in the way we're wired together as a husband and a wife. Not because we're a man and a woman, but simply because we're two different people. And we've got to be very critical. I mean, very careful about not being critical
of right.
The other person's style. For instance, the way... Now, here is my daytime. I mean, you can do the airplane test. It's neat. I'm a professional. Carol isn't. She's fast. Her daytimer, you turn it upside down and then the course. But you know, I don't...
That's right.
I don't criticize her for the way she keeps her day book. We both need to realize the necessity of it.
Right.
But it's just a different style. And we've got to be very careful about allowing the freedom to one another to do it a different way.
Right. Just to piggyback on that, I came to the conclusion one day that when you're going to criticize somebody, make sure it's sin. And not just style. I mean, make sure it's sin. Because that's the only thing you want to be against. Is sin. Just make sure that if you're going to jump on something, make sure it's sin. Chip, do you want to comment?
I'd just like to say one thing for some of the younger guys, maybe, in their walk with priorities and using time. That is... You may not be living out of a daytime, or you may not be living out of some big schedule and so on. I think the thing that helped me really was to start with a time to go to bed,
mm-hmm.
and a time to get up, a time to meet with God, a reading plan to meet with God, a Bible memory plan, just some basic things. You know, the average American watches between 30 and 40 hours of TV a week. My life changed when I decided I was not going to watch TV. When my wife and I, when we were just married, we moved and we unplugged the thing. We decided it was history for a while, and it changed our lives. I think when we talk about priorities and use of time, one thing that really made a difference in my life was to start where I live. Start small.
Mm-hmm.
Start with just some basic things about timing and what you're going to do with your afternoons, and like when you come home at night, kind of what the drill is. And for me, if you try to start with a day timer, you're going to wreck because it's just too much, too structured.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like to say a word about start small where you are. Just start with one step. It'll make a big difference, like you said, down the line.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good word. Good word. Yes, sir?
The minimal non-negotiable, just like he said, take a few small things and do them every day. If it's 10 sit-ups, if it's 10 verses, you know, set some minimal non-negotiables that you will not break.
Okay. We got a point on over. I've shared with you kind of what my plan is. You can adapt that here if you're a student, if you're a young married couple, or young business, you're just getting into a business world and so forth, but you can adapt that to you. But what we're overall saying, gang, is think through on where you're going with your life. That will change. You will make changes. I've changed mine. Not drastically, but that will change. But think through on what do you want your life to amount to. And then the idea is of being able to accomplish those things. I mean, live life where those objectives mean something. Not, they're just not nice-sounding platitudes on a piece of paper that you have filed over here on top of your desk. But they really mean something. And begin to think and to make definite steps in that direction. And that's what we're talking about. And then, in a way, here's a way to handle the things that just come into your life every day. Now, like Chip was saying, that's a tremendous word. But you just got to start. Start with something that gives purpose to your life and direction to your life. Now, there's in your handout, there's a success story by Charles Schwab. That's in your handout. By the way, if there was a piece of paper going around, if you didn't get a handout, if anybody did not get a handout, if you just put your name and address, I'll mail you one Monday morning. I have to put that on my do list, see, to mail you one Monday morning. But, now, let me, here's one other thing I put down, and I just put this down because, gang, it's not a sin to have fun. It's not a sin to just go off and blow an afternoon. It's not sin. And I just put that in because there was this Puritan pastor made this statement back in 1707. And so it's just, you don't just gear up and crank and schedule every minute and everything is and everything contributes toward my objectives and I got to be doing these three things and I've got this. No. So I put that in. That's in your handout also. But it's not a sin to be enjoying life. But this comment. Time is not saved by multiplying devices. Day timers, do lists, etc. It is saved by manly discipline. It is the man, not the mechanics, that will make the difference. If there is one underlying force for good management that is more powerful than all the others, yes, self-discipline. Before you can master time, you must first master yourself, and the rewards make it eminently worthwhile. You guys agree with that? It's just that we're back to this thing. It's up to you, guys. It's up to you. Now, how do you get started? I learned this from Max Barnett. Max preached this to me one time, and I never forgot it. And it's been such a help through the years. If you want to do something, then start. You got to start. Start now. Start enthusiastically and make no exceptions. Now, that doesn't matter if you just say, I'm going to memorize the TMS. Okay, start. Start now. Start enthusiastically and never make an exception. So you say, I'm going to memorize when I go to bed on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday night. I'm going to have an e-verse memorized. And gang, like Max shared with me, your head does not hit that pillow until you've committed that verse to memory. No exceptions. No exceptions. Now, when I was at A&M, I got the idea about memorizing verses, and I would memorize one every day because that was my objective. Every day. And I just didn't go to bed at night. I mean, I would not get in the bed and work on it. Because you know what happens that deal. I would leave the room, and I'd walk down the hall, and I'd go out on the sidewalk with some streetlights, and I'd work on that verse till I got it down. And I would work feverishly sometimes because I wanted to be able to quote it, but I had an objective. Gang, don't make exceptions. Set yourself a few objectives and don't make exceptions. Okay, just a couple of quickies. Here's a kind of a closing thought. To waste your time is to waste your life. To master your time is to master your life. That's all life is your time. That's all it is. And gang, if you can master your time, you've mastered your life. Isn't it true? Isn't that true? Anybody got any tidbits? Like, I always lay my clothes out the night before. Why? Because I stagger into the bathroom next, 5 o'clock the next morning, and I turn the light on in the closet, and I think, let's see, where are those blue jeans? Let me see now. Shirt. No. I got it all laid out. I can get dressed with my eyes closed. I read that in a book one time because General Eisenhower had a book called How to Save an Hour a Day, and that was one of the things he did. He laid his clothes out the night before. Just little things like that. What are some other things that you do that save you 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day? Yes.
I know some guys that really use their time in the car by having a cassette player.
Yeah.
They're just listening to the radio. That's a big
thing. Okay, piggyback on that. Learn to do two things at once. I don't mean to be kind of crude in here, but I've memorized a lot of verses sitting on the commode. A lot of verses. I've reviewed a bunch of verses. Isn't that right? You can't. Not a whole lot as you can do. I mean, you know what I mean? I've memorized a lot of verses going down the road. I'd be taking a trip, and I'd write out 5 or 6 verses that I wanted to memorize. Learn to do two things at once. What are some other things that would be helpful tidbits to us here?
The thing that has probably saved me more time in the last 3 years on correspondence is to learn how to use a computer and get on email.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, man, that is an absolute miraculous thing. Tell it to be more.
No, you'd be wasting your time. But that's a good word. I bought a cellular phone. I keep a cellular phone. Keep it in my car, and when I get out of the car, it goes on my belt. I just keep my cellular. Right now, I got it out in my car right now, but I got it turned off because I'm not using it, saving the battery. But I keep a cellular phone with me all the time. That saves me oogles of time. Another little tidbit, do it now. I learned that from Leroy. Do it now. You get a letter, and you think, you know, I need to write this guy. Write him right now. Just sit down and jot him out a letter right now. Do it now. Do it right now. And you will save oogles of time if you, instead of putting it on a list and thinking, yeah, I need to write old Bobby, and I need to tell him these things, and it's fresher in your mind, you'll put it on your list, and it'll be there for weeks. Do it now. Be prepared for interruptions. I was reading Time magazine the other day, and it was talking about Elizabeth Dole, and it said that they were stuck in an elevator one time. They were, you know, doing this elevator thing and just stuck. And here they are in this Washington building, and Elizabeth Dole is stuck. So she sits down on the floor, flops open the briefcase, and starts working on something. Never missed a beat. And this writer said, you know, she was so organized, she never missed a beat. So keep something with you. If you get interrupted, you got your verses with you, you got a magazine you've been wanting to read, but keep something with you. Any other comments? Okay, a couple of, know your goals, keep them before you, develop your system, fight your weaknesses, keep trying, and enjoy God and enjoy life. Any other comments or thoughts? Okay, let's pray. Well, Lord, we thank you for the time to do this. And Lord, we know we all got the same amount of time, same hours. And Lord, we only got one life. And I think that the scriptures admonish us to use it wisely. It's just like a vapor. It'll be gone before we know it. And we're admonished to invest our life and to use it wisely. We pray, God, that your Holy Spirit would convict us in the areas where we need admonition and correction, and help us, God, to get better at this, and for our lives not to be wasted, but to count for all eternity. Thank you for this time. In Jesus' name, amen.